This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Good evening and welcome to Africa News Tonight from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America, your source for Pan-African news and world developments. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington.
And I'm Yehiz Huhib, and coming up this hour on Africa News Tonight.
We had 6,500 migrants rescued in a day off the coast of Libya. Around 50 operations conducted by the Italian Coast Guard, the Navy, and other support vessels. More than 1,000 were rescued on Sunday.
That's reporter Josephine McKenna in Rome. We'll have full details on the story coming up.
Also, a speeding car filled with explosives crashed into a wall of a hotel in Mogadishu, killing at least 20 people. And Zimbabwe's Human Rights Commission has accused police of brutality and violating protesters' rights.
We'll have these stories and lots more ahead on Africa News Tonight.
Our top story this hour, Somali security officials say at least 20 people were killed when a speeding car filled with explosives crashed into a wall of a hotel in Mogadishu. Two government ministers, two parliament members, and two journalists are among the 30 people injured in the attack on the Sill Hotel. The hotel is near the presidential compound. A presidential security guard told VOA they fired at the speeding car, but it would not stop until the driver detonated his explosives. Al-Shabaab militants attacked the same hotel in February, killing 9 people. Local hotels are a common target for the militants.
The results from Saturday's presidential election in Gabon are expected to be announced in about 2 hours at 18 UTC. The Election Commission was supposed to release the results this hour, but then announced a two-hour delay. No reason was given. The two leading candidates, President Ali Bongo Ondimba and the former Foreign Minister Jean Ping, have both declared victory ahead of the official results. The capital, Libreville, is bracing for possible violence. Residents are stockpiling food. Police are guarding major crossroads and military units are stationed at fuel stations and banks. Violence broke out following the last presidential election. In 2009, Mr. Bongo won 40% of the vote and took over from his father, Omar Bongo, who had died after 42 years as president.
Italian authorities report 6,500 migrants have been rescued off the coast of Libya yesterday. An estimated 50 rescue operations were conducted by Italian naval and Coast Guard vessels and other support vessels. In other rescue operations on Sunday, over 1,000 people were rescued as migrants tried to complete the treacherous journey across the central Mediterranean to Italy before winter weather sets in. Reporter Josephine McKenna is in Rome. She describes the dramatic rescues that have taken place and how the earthquake in Italy is brewing a political storm between survivors and migrants.
In one particular incident, there were 700 people crammed onto a fishing vessel, and we saw dramatic images showing migrants, possibly from West Africa, Somalia, and Eritrea, jumping into the water off the boat and trying to swim towards their rescuers. Many of these people were very young. We had some other small babies on other vessels. Very dramatic scenes, and that takes the toll, the number up to about 112,000 who have landed in Italy just this year.
Is it a higher figure this year than it was last year at this time?
Well, more than 112,000 migrants have arrived in Italy up to now in 2016, and that's just slightly below the 116,000 recorded in the same period last year. But we had around 13,000 rescued in just 1 week at the end of May, and then 8,300 at the beginning of August. When we have these fine conditions and good weather, it seems that we see more of an influx and a lot of people tend to arrive at once. And we have those conditions this week, so there could still be more arriving.
When the Italian Coast Guard rescued these refugees and migrants, where did they take them?
The migrants are being taken by various vessels to different ports in southern Italy. It's not clear whether they will be staying in migrant centres there or transferred to others across the country, but they're currently on various ships and being taken to ports in the south of Italy, including the Sicilian capital, Palermo.
At what point will you see this starting to drop off? When will the weather start changing?
Well, inevitably, towards the end of the year, once the winter months start arriving, we see a change in the conditions. The waters become a lot rough, the winds pick up, and it's, of course, much colder. There is usually a drop-off towards the end of the year. But incidentally, the NGO Migrant Offshore Aid Station has issued a statement today saying, while thousands were rescued, we need to ensure there's safe passage for these migrants, saying that this is still one of the, if not the most devastating humanitarian catastrophe that the world has seen, and to ensure that no one at all deserves to die at sea.
How did the earthquake impact the refugees and migrants?
As you may have heard, several migrants were involved in the rescue and recuperation efforts that are still underway in the three medieval towns north of Rome. But I understand seven migrants were also injured when five buildings housing migrants in the small town of Amatrice collapsed during last Wednesday's earthquake. What we're also starting to see now is a little bit of political backlash emerging. As you might know, there are around 2,900 people in tents, people who've been forced out of their homes. They're unsafe. They escaped the earthquake and they're living in tent cities in the towns or near the towns where the earthquake was most serious. There has been some backlash in the media where others are saying it's unfair that people should be living in tents when migrants have a roof over their heads and some are even lucky enough to stay in a small hotel or another migrant centre across Italy, and it's not appropriate for these Italians who have lost everything to be living in tent camps.
That was reporter Josephine McKenna in Rome.
Nigeria is expected to officially enter a recession tomorrow when the government releases quarterly growth figures. Once Africa's largest economy, it has been grappling for months with rising inflation and falling oil production levels. VOA's Chris Stein looks at what can be done to right Nigeria's course. He has this report from Sokoto, Nigeria.
Stella Adebayo just rewrote the menu for the roadside restaurant where she sells shawarma sandwiches in the northern city of Sokoto.
Like the price of chicken fillets that we normally buy for the shawarma has increased. The shawarma bread has also increased, even the potatoes and everything, so we have to really, really increase price.
That means fewer customers are coming in to buy lunch. It's just one way Nigeria's high inflation rate is hurting consumers. Inflation hit an annual rate of 16.5% in June, its highest level since 2005. On Wednesday, the National Bureau of Statistics will release its growth report for the second quarter. Analysts expect it to confirm a long-awaited piece of bad news. Nigeria is in a recession. The economy contracted by about 0.4% in the first quarter and is expected to do so in the second quarter. Earlier this month, the IMF said Nigeria had lost its spot as Africa's top economy to South Africa. Different factors have caused this, chiefly among them trouble with Nigeria's top commodity, oil. The global drop in crude prices has not helped, but Nigeria's economy was further harmed by militant attacks on pipelines in the oil-producing Niger Delta region that have dropped production to about 1.5 million barrels per day, down from around 2.2 million barrels per day. Another problem has been a shortage of foreign currencies that Nigerian factories need to purchase materials for manufacturing. Since Nigeria imports most of its consumer goods, the currency shortage has also driven up inflation. John Ashbourne, Africa economist at London-based Capital Economics, says both of those factors will accelerate the economy's shrinkage in the second quarter.
In Q2, the manufacturing sector will have gotten even worse, and the oil sector will have fallen off a cliff because that's when all of the Niger Delta disruptions will have been counted.
Ashbourne expects the economy to shrink by about 3%. Pabina Yinkeri, head of research at Vetiva Capital Management in Nigeria's largest city, Lagos, says the government has taken encouraging steps to right the economy by raising the price of fuel and allowing the currency to float freely against the dollar. Yinkeri says Nigeria now needs to spend to revive the economy. But with less money from oil production coming into Nigeria's coffers, that may prove tricky.
We think this revenue challenge would have to mean the government would delay some of its capex plans for the year.
Ashbourne says Nigeria may have to borrow on the international market.
Nigeria has the room to borrow if they have to do that, and they have a really significant need for spending on particularly infrastructure, but all kinds of things.
Ashbourne expects the economy to shrink overall this year. He expects growth to resume in early 2017. Chris Stein for VOA News, Sokoto, Nigeria.
You're listening to Africa News Tonight live on the following frequencies, 15580 and 6080 kilohertz on the Voice of America. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington.
I'm Yehiz Wuhib. 15 past the hour, here's a recap of our top stories. A speeding car filled with explosives crashed into a wall of a hotel in Mogadishu, killing at least 20 people. Grappling for months with rising inflation and falling oil production levels, Nigeria is now on the verge of a recession. For more news and information, visit our website at voaafrica.com.
Nearly 70 protesters are back in court today in Zimbabwe, charged with public violence in connection with last Friday's demonstration. The court in Harare is deciding whether any of the accused can be released on bail. Even though a court declared the demonstrations legal, police used tear gas and water cannons on the demonstrators. Reuters reports the nation's Human Rights Commission has accused police of brutality and of violating protesters' human rights. High unemployment and a cash crisis have sparked the demonstrations. Harare has been telling the U.S. and Canadian embassies not to meddle in Zimbabwe's domestic politics. Minister of Information Christopher Mushowe has accused both embassies of being hostile towards the government and favoring the opposition. He said Zimbabwe does not take orders from any foreign state. Last week, the U.S. Embassy said it was troubled by the economic policies and financial strains that have prompted numerous recent protests. In the statement, the U.S. Embassy says it supports freedoms of speech and assembly and called on the Zimbabwe government to exhibit restraint and respect human rights. President Robert Mugabe, who was a subject of much of the protesting, is attending the Southern African Development Community Summit in Swaziland.
Amnesty International has made another appeal to Zimbabwean President Robert Mugabe for an investigation into the fate of a missing activist. The international rights group has asked Mr. Mugabe to establish an independent judge-led commission of inquiry into the abduction of Itai Zamara about 18 months ago. Sebastian Mumfu has more from Harare.
Marking this year's International Day of the Disappeared, Amnesty International appealed to Zimbabwe to scale up efforts to locate Itai Zamara, an anti-Mugabe activist who was abducted by suspected state security agents in March 2015. He has been missing since then. Amnesty's Deputy Director for Southern Africa, Shurimo Hengari, says Zimbabwe's authorities need to take action.
Failure of the police to account for the enforced disappearance of Itai Zamara speaks volumes about the high levels of impunity that persist in Zimbabwe. The authorities must take action to ensure truth and justice are delivered and free the Zamara family from the agonizing uncertainty they've been subjected to since Itai's disappearance.
Hengari says he has not received a response from Harare to a letter he co-authored last week.
Amnesty International Secretary General Salil Shetty and Human Rights Watch Executive Director Kenneth Roth wrote a letter to President Robert Mugabe's government urging it to establish an independent judge-led commission of inquiry into the abduction and likely enforced disappearance of Itai Zamara and ensure that those suspected to be responsible for his disappearance are brought to justice in fair trials.
Before his abduction, Tsamari had been leading demonstrations calling for President Mugabe to step down for failing to fix the economy and respect human rights. On Tuesday, Human Rights Watch urged Southern African development community leaders meeting in Swaziland to take concrete steps to improve respect for human rights among its 15 member countries. The rights group said the disappearance of Tsamari must be of concern to the Southern African leaders. Sebastian Mofu for VOA News, Harare.
Human Rights Watch says nations in Southern Africa are backsliding on human rights as governments repeatedly violate human rights and defy their constitutions. As VOA's Anita Powell reports from Johannesburg, the situation is being thrown into sharp relief as Swaziland, the continent's last absolute monarchy, takes over as chair of the Southern African Development Community.
Southern African leaders are expected to focus on development, trade, and political reforms in member countries as they meet this week at a regional summit of the Southern African Development Community in Swaziland. Rights groups, however, say the leaders are ignoring a big issue, a widespread deterioration of human rights across the 15-member bloc. Zimbabwe made headlines recently with escalating protests against the increasingly autocratic government of President Robert Mugabe, and police responded by beating, gassing, and arresting demonstrators. Human Rights Watch estimates at least 74 people have been arrested in the aftermath of a protest last week that police dispersed, even though demonstrators had a court order allowing their march. Senior Africa researcher Dewa Mabinga says Zimbabwe should be at the top of the agenda as leaders meet this week.
Unfortunately, it does not seem that SADC leaders appreciate the seriousness of the situation in Zimbabwe because they appear not to be looking or to be seeing what is happening. This is why we are raising this matter for the attention of SADC leaders to say you cannot behave like the ostrich and bury your head in the sand when Zimbabwe is burning. There is need to quickly deploy human rights monitors so that at least you know for yourself what is happening independently and you take appropriate action or corrective measures before it's too late.
Critics say Mugabe has destroyed the once promising economy, rigged elections, and trampled on human rights during his more than 35-year rule. Mavinga says SADC's new leader is unlikely to challenge an entrenched leader. For the next year, the organization will be headed by Africa's last absolute autocrat. Swaziland's 48-year-old King Swati III has numerous wives, cars, and jets in a nation where most citizens live in poverty. He is described as nation's unique government, in which opposition political parties are banned and the government is accused of suppressing dissidents, as a marriage between the monarch and the ballot box. Mavinga says he does not inspire confidence that rights will top the agenda.
It is not the right sort of message that should be coming from SADC leaders to have Swaziland as chair. But one hopes that perhaps it would be an opportunity for Swaziland in terms of the spotlight being on Swaziland for the next 12 months to highlight the abuses that are taking place in that kingdom.
The two-day summit ends Wednesday. Anita Powell, VOA News, Johannesburg.
The UN Food Program warns it may be forced to end school meals for more than 1.3 million children in West and Central Africa unless it receives $48 million. The WFP says the meals are a lifeline for children in the Central African Republic, Chad, and other countries who suffer from chronic hunger and malnutrition. Lisa Schlein reports from Geneva.
School begins in September and October in Cameroon, Mali, Mauritania, and Niger. The World Food Program warns more than 500,000 children in those countries are likely to be the first ones deprived of life-saving school meals. The WFP says 700,000 more children in 11 other countries will no longer receive the meals on which they rely when their schools start at the end of the year. WFP spokeswoman Bettina Lucia says such crucially important programs are endangered because of the many competing humanitarian crises around the world. She says the situation in West and Central Africa is especially critical because WFP is the sole or main provider of school meals in most of the region.
Families rely on this. If we can't deliver this, they are often really stuck. What could happen is that families take their children out of school. We have seen that all over the world, if money is being spent on school meals, the whole country will profit, the family will profit, the villagers will profit.
She tells VOA children who go to school on an empty stomach cannot concentrate. She says many will become malnourished and their bodies will not develop as they should.
What it means is they will never be as smart. They will never have strong bones as you have. They will never be as productive in the long run as other children would be. School meals help that children get, especially girls, get an education. They will have jobs. They will have fewer babies. They will have babies at a later time.
The World Food Programme has conducted studies in the cost of hunger in various parts of the world. The studies show that for every dollar invested in school meals, there is an overall $3 to $8 economic return. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
The United Nations say the death toll from fighting in Yemen has risen dramatically from 6,000 to 10,000 people in the past 10 months. UN humanitarian coordinator Jamie McGoldrick says the figure could go higher and millions of people in Yemen are in need of humanitarian aid. The deaths are a result of armed conflict between Iran-backed Houthi rebels and the government in Sana'a, which is supported by neighboring Saudi Arabia. Yemen is also dealing with attacks by militants, including a bombing yesterday in the southern port city of Aden. Authorities say at least 54 recruits at a pro-government army center were killed in the attack by a suspected Islamic State suicide bomber. The French news agency put the toll at 71 dead. And that wraps up this edition of African News Tonight. I'm Yee Swuhib in Washington.
And I'm Kim Lewis. And for all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com.
For listeners on VOA's Nairobi FM station, please stay tuned for the Swahili Evening News coming up at 16:30 UTC.
For all other listeners, please stay tuned to the Sunny Side of Sports. Tune in again at 1800 UTC for another edition of Africa News Tonight. On behalf of our producer, Bill Workinger, and our engineer, John Dryden, thanks for choosing the Voice of America.
Hello, I'm Linor Mudu. Please join me live every Tuesday at 17:30 UTC in VOA's health program, Health Chat. Hear from doctors, nurses, international experts discussing the health issues of your concern. Health Chat puts listeners directly in touch with medical professionals. You can talk to them live for free or email your questions. Health Chat brings the medical professionals to your home.
In our next edition of Straight Talk Africa, an in-depth discussion on democracy and the rule of law in Uganda. Join us right here on Straight Talk Africa at 1830 UTC.
Hello, Africa. This is James Butte, host of Daybreak Africa, inviting you to join me every weekday morning at 3, 4, 5, and 6 hours UTC as we bring you the latest in African news, features, and sports. You can also be a part of Daybreak Africa through our listener mail segment by sending your comments and opinions to daybreakafrica at voanews.com. You can also call us and leave us a voicemail at 202-205-9942. That's 202-205-9942. And when you hear the Voice of America identification, press the number 25 to leave us your message. Start your day with Daybreak Africa every weekday morning at 3, 4, 5, and 6 hours UTC on the Voice of America.